The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent
sports
columnists. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we'll be talking with the general manager and senior vice president of the New York Yankees, Brian Cashman. But before we get started with Brian, I'd like to tell you how you can experience a great shave with our great sponsor, Gillette. Gillette has been part of my day for as long as I can remember. A truly great brand. There was never anything else or anything close. My dad used it. I use it. My sons use it. You know what you're getting each time you use it, and that's a great shave. The high-quality craftsmanship of the blade is perfect, and I'm even a big fan of the Fusion Gel Cream. Used it this morning. My friends at Gillette have great news to share that makes it an even better experience. You can now get Gillette Performance delivered right to your door. Subscribe today and get every fourth order free. Check out Gillette online at www.gilletteondemand.com. Welcome to the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today on the Gillette Hotline, we will be talking to a man who has been on the job with the New York Yankees as general manager for 20 years, which in Yankee years is actually like 140 years. He is Brian Cashman. He made the biggest single move of the offseason. He put Giancarlo Stanton with Mr. Judge at Yankee Stadium. Everybody knows what a great story and a great surprise in many ways. I don't think so much to Brian Cashman. The 2017 Yankees were, throughout their playoff run, I wrote about the rising of Yankee fans, that this was the way things used to be. They came as close as they did to beating the Astros. Mr. Cashman wasn't going to take that lying down. So he's made some moves and has positioned his team. Happy spring training, Mr. Cashman.
Thanks so much. It's been a good camp so far. The weather's been amazing here in Florida. So for the Florida teams, it's been a thumbs up in terms of the early days of camp, getting ready to go into the schedule.
Cash, can you ever remember, by the way, it wasn't until the beginning of this week, we're having this conversation on Friday, I can't remember games ever starting this early.
No, I mean, I was talking to Willie Randolph the other day about it, and, you know, I think the position players got here and within 4 days, after the physical, 4 days of workouts on the field, I think we're rolling right into games. I think there's definitely, some newness to that, and I'm sure it has stuff to do with the, rather new CBA and stuff like that. So it's something we've had to adjust to, but you're right, normally it seems like a good 10 days before or at least the position players are here at least a week before they start playing games, but so be it.
The other night, I woke up about 2 o'clock in the morning, like an interior alarm had gone off, and realized that the United States women's hockey team was still playing, and watched the end of that game. But when you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, I know you're thinking about making moves. So that's a long way of asking you, at this point in time, at the end of February, are you done tinkering for now, especially having just brought in a third baseman?
My checks keep coming every 1st and 15th, which means my job has to continue the whole way through. So I think anybody who cares about what's, being run out there on a daily basis, recognizing that, there's no perfect roster ever. We always have to be open-minded and aggressive into trying to see if there's anything better. I tell our players, essentially the message from my chair is, hey, don't let me find someone better than you out there, because my job is always to try to trade up, try to, improve. Doesn't mean that I'm doing that with every decision that we make, but that's the effort.
We're talking to my friend Brian Cashman on the Mike Lupica Podcast. All right, so let's start at third base, because here's what I'm going to do with Brandon Drury, about whom I don't know a lot. But if he's as good as Didi Gregorius, then I'll bet on you bringing in guys from that part of the baseball world.
Yeah, there's really has a huge leap there. I think we're excited about having Brandon Drury come over here, and we think there is some untapped potential. He's an under-controllable player, 25 years of age. He's got about close to 1,000 plate appearances under his belt in the big leagues, and you know, over the last 2 years had to be pushed off a third because they have that big left-handed bopper, Lamb, you know, playing the position over right there. So they moved him to second, they moved him to left, trying to find a way to fit his bat in. So he's doing that and developing still at the same time. So we think we have an unfinished product, but we don't have the same, you know, I can't tell you he's another Didi Gregorius, certainly different type of athlete, but he is, you know, a corner. His best position is a corner third baseman, and that's our need, and obviously within the parameters set by ownership, which is staying under the luxury tax, you know, having a team ready to compete for a championship with potentially two, you know, if we don't do anything, two rookies, you know, Manning second and third. He kind of fits the criteria of, all right, we can bring something in, compete here. He's got options as well. So if, you know, if he stubs his toe, we have flexibility, but we're going to bet on the upside. Our pro scouts really, really like the bat. They, you know, they think that if left to his own, plug and play at third the rest of the way, that, you know, a little tweak and adjustments, which I won't go into what they are, that, you know, there is a chance to untap, or tap into what's left in that the physical side of this kid. So he's supposed to be a great baseball rat, you know, one of those guys that, you know, works too hard, has to take him out. You have to tear him out of the batting cage. You know, he obviously really cares about his craft. So the makeup is off the chart. We've got Mike Harkey in our bullpen, was the pitching coach in Arizona a couple of years back. Phil Nevin, who's our third base coach, was his manager for 2 years at Reno AAA for Arizona. So these guys all intimately know the players, have had their hands on the player. So all of it, you know, matches up with the pro scouting assessments from afar at the same time. So, you know, you keep your fingers crossed. We gave up two prospects we really like to get this done, which that's the downside of this because they're going to be quality major leaguers down the road. But you got to give to get, and hopefully he'll help us. That's the effort at least.
Cash, you know, you just used the expression baseball rat in the most honorable sense, and Drury is replacing a baseball rat at third base in Todd Frazier. And I was thinking of how important guys like that are to winning teams. And it goes all the way back to when you came in with guys like Brocious. And there's an alchemy that is involved in assembling these teams that sometimes, I mean, obviously you're looking for stats. Everybody's looking for stats and analytics and all that stuff. But it's everything I know about Drury sounds like he's going to be the same kind of guy in the clubhouse that Frazier was for you.
Well, Todd's unique. You know, he, you know, it's as if you can turn yourself back in clock as a coach or a player back in Little League, and you see the fun and joy that goes on throughout that entire dugout of the kids. Todd Frozen Time. That guy. I haven't had a chance to even put my hand in Drury's hand to welcome him to the Yankees yet. He got here yesterday, and I was wrapped up on conference calls all day. But so I can speak more to Todd, and I can tell you what the Mets got in Todd Frazier is that Little League kid that is.
Oh, I saw him yesterday, Cash. I saw him up in Port St. Lucie, and I'm thinking this is like we're like finishing a conversation that we started the last time I saw him in the Yankee clubhouse.
Yeah, he's happy. He's positive. I, being a front office guy, have never been in the major league dugout before. So, but from what the feedback from our players were, was he just, you know, he's yelling stuff from your dugout at the opposing team throughout the whole game and at his teammates and stuff. And it's pure baseball. It's just like it was always, you know, all of us turning back the clock when we played, dealt with. But sometimes as you get older and it's becoming, you know, you're more professional, and not that he's not, he never lost that love of the game where other people like, you know what, you know, they get a little bit more rounded, I guess. He's got that pure energy, that pure excitement, that pure love of the game, and it's in a positive way that's infectious throughout. So yeah, you know, Todd Frazier is without question, probably the prototypical baseball rat.
And before we get to Mr. Judge, Mr. Stanton, and Mr. Boone, home run hitters of different legend, okay, I just want to stay on Didi Gregorius for 1 second, because I will freely admit to you, I had no idea what a good baseball player he is. And Cash, I'm looking at his stat line from last year, okay? And he missed 26 games. He was out pretty much the first month of the season. If he doesn't miss those games, okay, he's going to end up with 30 home runs, 100 RBIs, and he probably would have hit 300. And when I look back on everything you did last year, he, to me, is a sidebar whose name should have been up in lights a little more than it was.
Yeah, he's a special one. You know, obviously not just with the continued growth on the field because of his athletic abilities and how he's able to now translate that into consistent positive performance. He's an awesome human being. You know, he's another one that wakes up every morning. I've never seen him have a bad day. I've never seen him have that million-dollar smile. So you're right. He's someone that we're lucky, I think, to have our fans be able to watch how he goes about his business, not just producing, but enjoying the game he loves to play and has a chance to get paid to do it. So he, you know, listen, I had a lot of pro scouts swing through this guy. There was a lot of pressure at that time when Derek Jeter retired. We didn't have, unfortunately, we did not do a good enough job in terms of developing an in-house candidate to replace him. And so we had to go outside and you know, I spent the entire winter trying to secure various people. Didi was on that list, but you know, back when all that went down, we had, you know, Jay Darnell, Tim Nehring, Jim Hendry, you know, Kendall Carter, amongst others, in our pro scouting side, you know, pounding the desk. This is definitely a worthy candidate with has, you know, untapped potential, higher ceiling. They had a glut of infielders. They had moved Didi over to second, actually, because of various guys that they had, you know, in their opinion, in front of them. And I couldn't get him. I could not get him through Dave Stewart, my good friend, who was the GM at the time of Arizona. And I implored, I made offer after offer after offer, and I just could not match up with him. And then I remembered how, you know, much Detroit loved Shane Green, and I didn't want to give up Shane Green. And Shane pitched great against the Tigers. He had a great maiden voyage for us, but I called up my counterpart in Detroit at the time, Dave Dombrowski, and said, listen, and it was like with hat in hand, reluctant. I didn't want to, you know, have to offer this name, but I was like, Dave, I know you want Shane from me. I'm just going to tell you right now, if you can get Didi Gregorius from Arizona, I'll give you Shane Green. And within 48 hours, Dave got it done. And now we had a three-way deal. I didn't know what at the time he was giving up. He wound up giving up Robbie Ray, who's been turned out to be a great trade for the Diamondbacks as well, because Robbie Ray turned out tremendous for those guys as a starter. So everybody got happy. But that doesn't happen if I don't go through Detroit.
Talking to Brian Cashman, and, you know, since the end of last season, I've had this conversation with Brian before. I've written this. Of all the moves you made, and Stan's a huge move, and it just makes the Yankees not only a better team, but a sexy product again. We'll get to him. To me, the biggest move is Aaron Boone. And because you really, to me, and you may have a different view of this entirely. And again, we've talked about this before. This, to me, you're placing a very big bet on yourself with this move, because what you did, it's not unprecedented. I mean, you're still a very extremely young man, so you probably don't remember Yogi Berra making it to Game 7 of the World Series once and losing his job as Yankee manager and being replaced by Johnny Keene. Okay, but what you did was it's a big radical move with someone who was Joe Girardi had managed them to within a game of the World Series. Okay, and you obviously did not make a hasty move here. This is something that you had considered. But still, you have to understand that we all know that there's a big target every year on the Yankees' back. But to me, this was the most dramatic thing you did in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the easy thing for someone in a leadership position like me is to make sure instead of you doing your job, the easiest thing for me to do would have been to protect myself in just going along to get along, and not that
go along to get. I was just thinking the same thing. Yeah, that's right.
So the bottom line was I'm being paid to do a job, and part of that is making very difficult decisions. Joe Girardi is and will continue to be a great manager. He was a great manager for us. But at that, you know, right or wrong, I felt like that shelf life had, you know, run its course, and it was important for a change. And so I could have taken the safe harbor and said, you know what, everything is playing out perfect in the public relations side. But if I thought it was vitally important for us to make a move to continue on our journey, with the cast of characters we currently have and how it all fits together, you know, I made that tough decision. Certainly hope it's the right one for our fan base. Like every decision we make, it's all supposed to line up with every connected decision to get us closer to the next championship. I recognize that not every decision is going to be the right one. But at the end of the day, I wasn't afraid. I'll give myself points for not being afraid of making the decision. But at the same time, you're 110% right. It puts a bullseye on me. and the only way I can reconcile that is I've got to do my job. I can't be afraid to do my job. I've got to honor the commitment that the owners made to me to do that job description and not shy away from it, no matter what the outcome or no matter what the costs are associated with it. So if it brings more pressure my way, so be it. If it puts me in the spotlight worse than I needed to be, so be it. Do your job. That's the bottom line, and that's all I'm trying to do. I certainly hope I made the right call. Because I did say goodbye to not just a good man, a good friend, but a great manager. But the flip side of this is we hope and believe, and I believe, that we've welcomed a good man that has a chance to be, you know, a great manager over time and is going to impact us and help us get to the next level. So I'm proud that we've won championships with Joe Torre, that I've been a GM under. I'm proud that we've won a championship with Joe Girardi, which I've been a GM now with. And now I'm hoping to find a way that we can collectively win a world championship with a new manager in Aaron Boone. I'd be very proud of being able to say I've won with three different managers over the course of my tenure. So that's a new dream of mine. But the ultimate dream is, no matter who you're working with, is just win a championship.
You know, you'd be like Joe Gibbs winning Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks, Cash. I mean, that's one way of looking at it. How surprised was Joe Girardi?
You know, I can't speak for Joe. There was the ultimate. Ultimately, it was very difficult. It was very hard on me because I love the man, and I respect the person. And if anybody asked me for a recommendation, he'd get the highest recommendations. I don't want to speak for Joe about being surprised or not surprised. I think at the end of the day, we had an honest dialogue about, everything, as we would always do, especially when contracts expire. And it's just not easy. It's just hard to do and deal with this type of stuff, and especially when it involves people you care about and for better or for worse. And so he did an exceptional job, and he took us a long way, and he gets a great deal of credit for why we were successful throughout his run. His record speaks for itself. He managed in the toughest market, or arguably one of the toughest markets in the world, and held his own and went out on a high. And I can't speak for Joe about it, but I know he loves this game, and he's going to do great things. He'll continue to do great things whenever he chooses to pursue the next opportunity.
Trying to Brian Cashman on the Gillette hotline. Brian, I would think just as interesting a meeting was when you sat down with the owner of the team and said, hey, listen, I'm thinking of making a change at manager. How'd that go?
Well, it wasn't one that was, Hal Steinbrenner was not caught off guard. This was an open dialogue I shared with Hal Steinbrenner, all information, both good and bad, about our operation and how, this aspect might be running, at full capacity, and other aspects might not be, operating at full capacity, and including, stuff that I struggle with, and then how, obviously, being an owner and being a smart one, he's not going to rely solely on what Brian Cashman, his general manager, says. He's going to have his own different avenues to drive down, so he can, vet all information coming his way, so he's not, he's not exposed to just one person within the operation suggesting this, that, or the other thing, because not anybody has all the right answers at all times. So I think Hal, over the course of time, and that's the last number of years, has been able to get feedback from various resources that, helped guide his decision-making. I don't want to speak for Hal either, but it wasn't a one-and-done type of conversation. Hey, Hal, this is what I want to do. Okay, whatever you want. This has been something that, Hal has had an opportunity to assess over the course of time, and that's not a short period of time. And so ultimately, when the contract was expired and we're forced to make a new decision that, it's going to cost $20 to $25 million of a reinvestment in a new individual, into an individual. I think, he tried to make an informed decision, by, giving the sign of the cross to my recommendation. But none of these are easy. They're very, very difficult decisions because, again, Joe Girardi will be a Yankee for life, and he was a world champion player, a world champion manager, somebody has always been successful in everything he's done, and that'll always be continued. We're lucky. We were lucky to have him, and I've been lucky to be associated with him. But unfortunately, again, these jobs are tough, and you have to make tough calls. And that was then, and this is now. So now we have a whole new operation. That's the one thing about the game is the game continues to change, evolve, and grow. And my job is to be open-minded. My job is to not be afraid. My job is to forge ahead and make tough calls. And at the very least, I'm not afraid to make those tough decisions. And we hope that it serves us well.
We're talking with Brian Cashman on the Mike Lubica podcast. More with Mr. Cashman in a minute. But first, this from Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. What was it like? And again, this leads into the Stanton question. What was it like? I can remember walking out of the stadium after game 5 of the American League Championship Series. And there was, this, okay? We talked about this too. Those games against the Astros especially, but really starting with the wild card game against the Twins. That was the first time in my mind, even in the World Series year, that the new place sounded like the old place, that it was as loud and alive as the old joint had been on the other side of 161st Street. What was it like to get back down to Houston and watch the offense completely shut down the way it did?
Yeah, that's the amazing part of this sport. The Astro team that we faced in the Bronx was not the same Astro team you faced on the road. And I do think that this old ballpark, the old ballpark that we are used to with the home field advantage, that crowd and with the way that the stadium was constructed, for people who don't recall or don't know why or don't remember, the upper deck was, you're not allowed to have, the building codes now, over the course of time clearly have merged and changed and improved. So you cannot recreate the old stadium dynamic that we had that was an automatic home field advantage because that upper deck was right on top of the field. So I said, I've never been to a basketball game at Duke Cameron Indoor Arena, but from I'll try to use it as a comparison as an opposing team coming to Duke. I understand the student body is right on top of the court. Yep. And it's a very intimidating place to play, and it's very loud in your face. And so that's what the umpires, that's what the opposing teams used to have to deal with at the old stadium. And the new stadium, once we obviously opted to improve and build a brand new facility on a twice the size property, we lost that because obviously the updated building codes now. So the upper deck, was plays out like any new stadium facility would, which is more safer environment of fans. I remember I used to run when I'd run the upper deck at the old stadium, and not running down was kind of like, oh my God, if I make a misstep, I feel like I can fall right over and drop and die. Yeah, right. And I always wondered, how do you drink a beer in the upper deck?
Oh, I didn't even like sitting up there. I'd go visit somebody or so I'd leave the press box and I'd go, I'm not good with heights anyway, Cash, but I didn't even like looking down from the upper deck.
You were literally, it was somewhat, it was a little, I won't say scary, but it was like, wow, I can't imagine if somebody's having 2 or 3 beers and, that if they walk the wrong way down that aisle, that they can't not necessarily go over the top. It was that crazy. But from a opposing player standpoint and even umpires, they said, it definitely affected them. They could feel all this 57,000 people on top of you. And that was anyway. So you're right. Bottom line, long story short, is that series, this postseason, was really the first time the new place rocked like the old place. And that was obviously awesome, and hopefully that's going to continue to be the case. And if it is, that means that great things are taking place on the field.
When was the first time, at what point did you actually think that not only could you guys be in play with Stanton, but that you could make it work?
I always saw that it could work because of our deep farm system, because of all the money coming off of our roster with the Alex Rodriguez as well as Mark Teixeira, CC Sabathia, over the last 2-year contracts that were coming off the books. So I know financially it would fit. But, you know, Stanton turned out to be plan B. Plan A was, you know, I think the entire industry was captive to Shohei Ohtani coming from Japan, this two-way player that's got to have a position to play for a period of time per week, as well as, once a week starting. And so we were anxiously waiting to see if we could, beat the field on that.
And were you surprised when you found out that the New York Yankees hadn't made the cut with him?
Yeah, I definitely was, because I guess in hindsight, it seems clearer that he preordained that he had no interest in anything. There was no spring training, no team in Florida for spring training. I mean, his team, the Nippon Ham Fighters, a number of years back, had, I think, two straight spring trainings where they were in Arizona at the Seattle Mariner San Diego Padre facility out in Arizona. And so that was his experience. He was over there with the Nippon Ham Fighters. He had spring training on the Arizona side. And so he knew all those facilities and competed against those clubs, why they were over there. And so none of us knew, at least east of the Mississippi, that this was I won't call it a charade, but this was a false hustle. There was an email sent out with like seven or eight things we had to deal with and answer questions for and do it in a video presentation. So all teams, went into overdrive to put their best foot forward, and it turned out like we never had a shot to begin with, but we weren't really told that. It was like the first week in December is when I got news that we didn't make round two, the final round. And then when we started seeing, break out over the internet and online about who else was out, all of a sudden the narrative was clear. Anybody that had spring training in Florida was not making the final cut. And then all the teams were, west of the Mississippi, almost all entirely in California. And the norm was obviously anybody who's had spring training in Arizona. And so right away I was like, well, then that, could have saved everybody a lot of headache. But I'm assuming he knew that's what his preference was, but he wanted to be open-minded to the first round just in case he changed his mind. But he didn't. And so once that happened, we pivoted. I had been already discussing with Michael Hill, the GM of the Miami Marlins, because it's easy to bet against yourself when you're up against 29 other clubs. So it's right. Like, all right, am I going to place a bet on us or the field? I better be smart about this and make sure that I play the field. And so while playing the field and betting on it, somebody else may emerge, we were discussing as early as November with the Miami Marlins about Giancarlo Stanton and saying, hey, I got to keep this option open for Ohtani to DH and start. But if that doesn't happen, I'll play on this. And we started those dialogues that lasted over a month. And then once Ohtani declared himself, I was able to jump off. And at the time, thankfully, Stanton had not approved a trade to San Francisco or St. Louis, and we had already had enough dialogue that Michael Hill and I were able to navigate, a settlement.
Talking to Brian Cashman on the Gillette Hotline, and the excitement about the two big guys being in the same batting order, not that you don't have other boppers in there, too, is like nothing. When I first got to New York, George made the play for Reggie. Okay. And then I remember when you made the trade for A-Rod, because your current manager decided to play pickup basketball one day after the 2003 season. But, it's not just the Yankees being big and bad again. Again, it has brought back a rock star quality to the New York Yankees. And just whether you're a Yankee fan, whether you hate them or love them, you're going to want to watch them. I wrote a column the other day saying, I'm not sure if you're the team to beat. I still think the Astros are the team to beat in the American League, but you're certainly the team to watch.
Well, we want to be more than just a team to watch. I think you're right to have the possession arrow towards Houston, Boston, Cleveland, because...
Wait a minute. Did you actually call yourself the little engine that could, mister? I sometimes have difficult processing big words, but little engine that could.
Well, maybe we're the big engine that could. Maybe
did you really
that way,
say but, that but with
I did.
Cash?
Well, they asked me, obviously, last year I called the Red Sox the Golden State Warriors, so now what would I call yourselves? And I said, well, the little engine that could, because ultimately... what have the Red Sox done? They've added a huge bat. So they've already won the division last year. They finished, I think, off the top of my head, three games better than we did last year. You know, we lost Frazier, obviously, to free agency. Right now, either replaced him with either, you know, Drury or kids or one of these non-roster invites. We acquired Stanton, obviously, which was an area between DH. You know, two areas that were hurtful for us last year were first base, because Bird was out all year, and DH. And so now with the big bat of Stanton, it's going to provide cover more so than we had, obviously, last year. You know, so between our outfield glut, you know, Stanton, Judge, Gardner, Ellsbury, Hicks, you know, something's, you know, somebody's going to be rotating enough in there that's going to fill up that gap. So we've improved, but they've improved, you know, and so how we compare against each other all remains to be seen. So, you know, we have lost some guys from our club that was on last year's team, and every year is different. So I don't know if anybody can say anything until they've earned it. And so that's all I was trying to say. So if I could change it now, I'd say the big engine that could, because we've got some big engines.
Oh, I like
in there,
that.
And that's the job, try to put enough firepower in there in the bullpen rotation as well as the position player front to take a shot at it.
When you look at this team, I mean, it must be fun for you and Aaron to say, okay, how about if we bat this guy here and that guy there? But as great as Stanton is, to me, the kid who changed everything last year is obviously the right fielder. And on top of everything, even though he became this kind of slow, you know, Yankees are supposed to do what he did. Maybe not as young, but what a great kid he is. And going forward, I remember one time Bobby Valentine was talking about Piazza, and he said, you don't know how easy your job gets when your best player is a good guy, because that filters down through the rest of the roster. And you got a lot of good guys. But for this kid to handle everything that got thrown at him last year and to produce the way he was, that was really fun to watch.
No, I agree with you. And, you know, we're lucky that, you know, Damon Oppenheimer selected him when he did. Damon Oppenheimer, I think, is an underrated I think he's one of the best amateur scouting directors in the game. And so, obviously, he saw so much in Aaron. You know, it's easy to see what he saw physically, but he also, on his in-house visits and stuff, got a chance to know the person. And all these quality people that you referred to, whether it's Didi, whether it's Aaron Judge, amongst others, you know, that really, you know, that goes to their parenting. I mean, they were brought up the right way in a certain way, and so we all get a chance, whether it's in the media, the fans, or the front office, or the coaching staff, get a chance to see it play out and how they go about their business and how they are true professionals in every sense of the word, and that goes, you know, to their parenting, their family backgrounds and stuff like that. So we're lucky to inherit that, and certainly it's great to tap into it, you know, as they're in the pinstripes.
We're talking to Brian Cashman on the Gillette Hotline, and as we're having this conversation, Cash, you monitoring this J.D. Martinez physical drama over in Fort Myers? It seems to have gone on for about 2 days now.
I have not monitored it, but no, I haven't. Is it something breaking or no?
I don't know. It seems to have been going on in slow motion. Did you ever think he wasn't going to end up there?
It seemed a perfect match. So, you know, I know internally here we've made an assumption that looks like it's on the verge of occurring. That that's the one thing about this free agent market. For instance, we didn't participate in competing on a J.D. Martinez free agency because we early in the process acquired Stanton. If Stanton wasn't available, and you know, I suspect I would have had a conversation or more, maybe. You know, we were never put in that position, but maybe it would have been something where the Yankees and Red Sox were having various conversations on, you know, various similar players in free agency, which has happened obviously a ton throughout my career, as you would expect. Because, you know, we do like the same players. We're, you know, over the course of time, whether it was Theo running the club or Ben Cherington or obviously now Dave Dombrowski, you know, we do gravitate to very similar players, which are high-end championship caliber type talent.
Before we get to the various controversies with the free agent market this year, Cash, what does it say about the modern state of the game when you had a team that came within a game of the World Series and changed managers? And your nemesis in the American League East, the Red Sox, once again made the playoffs, were disappointed in the playoffs, but won the American League East. And I was thinking about this the other day. And somebody told me when the last time this happened was, but this is extremely interesting about, I'm not saying the precarious state of a modern manager, but it's interesting to me that the two powers, the two continuing powers in the AL East, both had successful seasons, not World Series seasons, and changed managers.
It's hard to say. I mean, I think obviously, they are both unique in intimate decision making. I think it's a reflection too that the win-loss column isn't always reflective, about 100% of what the manager is doing, within that dugout. So, the flip side of that is when teams don't make changes, if they have, circumstances that cause a losing situation or less wins than you would have expected, and people say, no, we're not going to make any changes because, injuries or underperformance or unique circumstances had more impact on why the season didn't go well enough, and so we're staying the course with the person we have in there. I'd just say the flip side of that also would apply, even when it's in the success. You can dissect and take out, we're going to make a change because not all of the aspects, solely go into, hey, if you win all these games, the manager gets all that credit. It's just, it's such a, there is such a blend of contributions from all different departments that go into whether you're successful in a given year or not. And so just like not one person would get all the credit, the same thing, not one person should get all the blame. And I think you just compartmentalize it into individual decisions as you move forward. What is best as we take this next step? Is it making a change or not? I can't speak to Boston's process. I can only speak to ours. And again, we had a great one that we're very proud and that we're associated with and had a huge impact on us for the time he had. And we felt it was just time, for a lot of reasons not to go through to take a next step somewhere else. And hopefully it'll serve us well. And we're in it for the long haul with Aaron Boone, and recognizing that obviously he's never done this before, so that he'll stub his toe and grow, but we're going to bet on that growth, and so we're happy and excited that he's here. But it wasn't an easy process. But anyway, I'd say that I think it's more of a recognition from the industry that all the wins or all the losses don't necessarily fall on the back of the manager or his coaching staff.
I already lied to Brian Cashman about how long I was going to keep him. His team actually does have a baseball game today. I'm looking at the batting order. Not bad for February 23rd. Ellsbury, Stanton, Bird, Hicks, Gregorius, Torres, Romine, Andujar, Clint Frazier. Are you comfortable going to war with the starting pitching you have? Do you have enough starting pitching to win?
I'm never comfortable. This was a very, successful staff for us last year. We've got some kids that have taken, further steps being, becoming big leaguers or becoming, insurance policies or contributors for the big leagues, whether it's Chance Adams or Luis Sessa as a follow-up campaign or Domingo Germán, Justice Sheffield's obviously pushing his way up the ladder. So those guys, amongst others, I think provide us with, comfort levels. We always walk that tightrope of not having enough pitching. I think every franchise, our counterparts across, the bridge in New York City, the New York Mets could attest to that. They had as good a pitching staff as you could ever want.
And, right.
But when injuries hit, it doesn't matter how deep you are, it can derail you. So ultimately, I think the easy answer is you're never comfortable. But I'd rather have what I have right now than have less than what I have right now. But my job is to add to it. And if I can, I will. And if I can't, we'll continue to stay patient until I could.
All right. I'm going to turn the floor over to you. And again, this is a conversation we've been having over time. What was your reaction? No one's been less afraid to spend money on baseball players than you. And again, you didn't sign a free agent, Stan, but you picked up a contract, you know, whose value is even more than Alex Rodriguez's old one is. What was your reaction in the barrel the way you always are as the general manager of the New York Yankees when you heard the suggestion that somehow major league teams were colluding against free agents this spring?
I mean, I've heard it play out quite often. You know, I think it's something that's, you know, very explainable, you know, and I'd rather not go through my opinions on it because I haven't been a big participant in free agency this winter because of our luxury tax, but that's a component to that, you know. I think over time, the changes in the CBA have certainly created a dynamic and a chessboard of how you play the team building game. If you're in it to win it, you're going to be more aggressive. And if you deem yourself not good enough to be in it, then there's some rewards to stand down and not be going all in or even there's you don't want to be in that middle ground. I'm going to be a playoff team. And if I can't compete for that, you know, I don't want to be in the middle ground because, you know, there's so good of the reward factor, you know, that comes your way in your rebuilding process to compete for those, you know, it's like the NBA, those lottery, picks and stuff like right. that. So I don't know. There's a lot of different circumstances. Certainly, I don't know if anybody saw what was going to happen when the new ownership took place in Miami and a lot of the quality high-end players that wound up being traded. Certainly, you know, I even alluded to it earlier. Maybe I would be playing on JD Martinez if I didn't trade for a guy with an existing contract. So now it took a competitive team off the free agent acquisition board, you know, in that sense. You know, and it was a big market in us. And so there's a domino effect of a lot of things that, you know, are explaining. I don't even know if this was a great free agent class, per se, you know, but it's hard to say on all of it. I think there's a lot of reasons behind it. But I don't. The one narrative I don't buy is how analytics of now everybody's thinking the same way, because you know having one thing being general manager for 20 years and having harmony from ownership to team president to general manager baseball operations on a consistent basis on a year in and year out basis, is hard enough. So now that implication would be that you have harmony top to bottom, all buying into analytics through 30 clubs. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen, so there's no way that's the case, that all of a sudden all clubs are thinking the same way. That's I would challenge that every day of the week because, you know, that defies, you know, how we all operate. We all run and pursue different belief systems, and you have young owners from different backgrounds. You have older owners that are stuck in their ways and try influencing certain people. I don't even name the names, but if I could, I'd put them out there right now saying, you're going to tell me this guy who's been in the game for this long, who's wired this way, is now all of a sudden all in on this young analytic revolution? I don't buy it. So, and more recent history of decisions that have been made in those environments would suggest otherwise. So, it is what it is. It's, you know, whatever the reasons are, I think they're separate and distinct, not some sort of collection of single-minded effort.
All right, my last question for Brian Cashman, who I'm constantly telling would have made a great Boston College man and probably would have played baseball there, except Doug Flutie made the school too popular. Isn't that the case, Brian?
Loved it. Yeah, when I met him that one time, he loved it. He loved the fact that he kept me out of I got waitlisted at BC, and it was because of his past. Their enrollment tripled, and when I told him that, he was very happy to learn. As a Red Sox fan, he kept the Yankee GM away from his university.
Cash, you know, when he goes to the game, hundreds of great things about Douglas Flutie. Okay, he brings his glove when he goes to the game. You know this, right? He's still the boy in him. All right, here's my last question: which kid at camp do you think could surprise everybody? I love Clint Frazier, and I love to think there's a chance for him to play his way past that. Nothing against the guys he's trying. Which kid do you think has the chance to do a breakthrough over the next month in Florida?
Wow, I mean, it's hard to say. You know, we've got a lot of different guys. So, you know, I'll blend it. You know, I think that the initial exposure of Tyler Wade at the big league level last year, we didn't see, you know, what he's really capable of. So I think that him getting his feet wet at the big league level last year and struggling at times was part of his journey that will benefit him in 2018. So I think we'll have a better chance of seeing what everybody knows exists that he's had success, obviously, through Scranton now at AAA. So Tyler Wade is somebody I think is going to probably, have a better chance for 2018 to show what he's really capable of. I think Chance Adams and Luis Sessa also are both pitchers ready to take the next step. You know, those guys, you know, Sessa's had some time in the big leagues last year. He came in, you know, a little bit out of shape, and I think it affected his year. He's back in the shape he was in the 16 and throwing extremely well. So I bet you Sessa and Chance Adams make some noise this year, too, from the starting rotation side.
And I'm going to panhandle because I don't know if I'm going to get to a game today. If you're wandering around today and see an extra Marjorie Stone and Douglas cap, grab one for me with you. It is such a cool thing that baseball is honoring the victims and the survivors of that school. It's such a cool thing, Cash.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's certainly it's a shock throughout the nation, and hopefully finally change will take place.
Brian Cashman, the general manager of the Yankees. The Yanks are playing. They got a game at 1:05 today. The aforementioned Mr. Sessa will be the starting pitcher. The big engine that could. I think I can do something with that. But, Brian, as always, I didn't get to half of the stuff I wanted to talk to you about today. But on a game day, thank you so much for doing this.
You got it.
Brian Cashman, the general manager, not afraid to make a move. All he did was change managers and bring in Giancarlo Stanton. And again, the Yankees may turn out to be both. They may turn out to be the team to watch and the team to beat. Again, I think this is the second time for Brian on our podcast. We have such fun here every week because it's only people that I like to talk to. So please continue to download. The numbers are amazing. Subscribe. Go leave comments. And we'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.